Freewheeling on the road, dog, Meredith Oaks, Chris T, asking you about the rent, because here we are sitting in Rockefeller Center, one of the most famous complexes in the entire world, but there's someone's name on it. It's Rockefeller, and Eileen Rockefeller will be here in a little bit. Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself is her memoir that's just out, and we'll find out exactly what money can buy. 8888 Road Dog is the number. Talking about the rent today, and if you've ever used the expression, what am I, a Rockefeller, right? When your kids want Grand Theft Auto 5 and all the stuff they might ask you for. Well, now you might get something. You might know how to answer that. Welcome. Eileen Rockefeller's here.
Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Good to see you.
We're sitting in the building and complex that bears your family's name.
Is that right? I thought it was across the street.
Well,
no, this is actually considered part of Rockefeller Center.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
This building and the Time Life building.
I learn something every day.
There you go. As seen in the TV show Mad Men, they show shots of this building all the time.
Yes, right.
In that series. But welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. And we're talking to a group of truckers. Is that everybody out there on the road?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Professional drivers.
Wow. I'm wondering what they are doing to keep themselves from falling asleep. I suppose listening to this show,
among other things.
That and 64-ounce coffee.
So I was wondering whether anyone out there does any imitations to keep themselves, you know, just alive and well.
Entertained?
Because I didn't talk about it in the book, but I actually am entertained. I love doing imitations. And actually, I got an email yesterday from Fred Newman on Prairie Home Companion. And he's going to see if he can get me on, because he's one of the few people until this moment, other than my family, who knows I love to do imitations of things like, oh, a horse galloping through a ghost town.
Really?
Which is very quiet. And I don't know whether it would work on this. It does get louder, but I'm not sure it would really work.
Give
do you think
try.
I ought to try?
Please. Yeah, please.
Okay, well, everyone's going to have to listen really carefully.
All right. We'll be quiet.
And let me just give you some background. I invented this when I had to be quiet at night when I was at boarding school, and I got really bored because I wasn't ready to go to sleep yet, so I had to think of a quiet imitation. So here it is. I hope they could hear it.
Wow.
Wow.
That had everything going on. That was really impressive.
That's what you learn at boarding school. I've always wondered what people do at boarding
school.
Yeah,
well, you know, if you're a little dyslexic, what else do you do? So
Fred's the guy that does the sound effects on that.
That's Fred Newman. Yes, actually,
Prairie
I met
Home
him
Companion?
At a bar mitzvah, and it was my best come-on line. I said, hello, Fred. How would you like to hear... Would you like to hear my horse galloping through a ghost town? And to my utter delight, he said yes. And so we went down and we stood between two glass doors at this restaurant. And I did that, and he did many other things, and we riffed for about 15 minutes. So
yeah, if you've never heard Prairie Home Companion, there's a lot of self-made sound effects on that show.
Oh, absolutely.
And Fred does them. He's pretty remarkable.
Right, and a few people know that there's really only a very small difference between a saw and a bilge pump. So
this could have been another career for you.
I know. Well, I thought, why not start it on radio? So... I mean, I'd be happy to do it, but I know you may have other questions you want to ask me.
Well, no, after that, we want to hear more imitations. When you said imitations, I thought you were going to do W.C. Fields
or
something.
Yeah, I thought you meant impersonations.
Oh, I can imitate a Maine accent, but I'd rather do something more like a crow or a bilge pump or a saw.
Oh, okay.
Well, you get to choose.
Well, bilge pump, because I'm
bilge
a sailor,
pump?
I sail.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm a sailor, too. So some of this depends on whether my mouth is dry or not. And if it's dry, it's going to be more like a saw. But let me take a sip of water.
Okay. All right.
That's good, because water always gets, you know.
Fred, if you're listening, your job is in jeopardy.
Okay, so here's a bilge pump. That's a bilge pump.
It's really accurate, right?
And suddenly all the bilge water is left in the room.
All right, so then
well.
When you don't have any more saliva, it's a saw.
That's a really good saw.
Jeez, you're
well,
good
thank
at that.
You.
So you want to be our official sound effects person? I had no idea that's what we were going to talk about today.
Well, I didn't really either, but I thought of it on the way here.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
The book, which is called Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, it took a long journey, did it not? I mean, this is...
It did. It did. Originally, I thought I was going to write a book just about my kids at a time when we were doing an experiment in what we called simple living for 5 months, living like the 1840s when they were 8 and 10. But when they went off to college, this was a great way to bring them back on the page. I was having to shift identities from being a full-time mom back into I didn't know what. And so I began by writing stories about them, which I completed, but they were still too close to their ages for me to publish. So I dug deeper and I went to my family of origin, and that's where the real work began. And it was a real dig and into my past and ultimately a beautiful healing with all my siblings.
Well, writing a book like a memoir, it can be very cathartic, right?
I think it really can, but the biggest challenge is you have to go deep enough, because until you go all the way in, you don't get to go through. And I think where a lot of people get stuck is that they go partway in and it's, you put on the brakes.
That's that another good sound another effect.
Break. Yeah, I like
and,
that.
Like, I do not want to go any farther. So,
because of them or because of you or both?
It could be both. Mm-hmm. And in my case, it was often me. But this is where a community comes in. Really, I don't believe anyone can grow without having a community supporting them. And I had just an amazing community, from starting with my husband, and my sons are so wonderfully supportive, and I have lots of really great friends. So with that kind of support, it makes all the difference.
What was painful about being a Rockefeller? Because that was part of the problem, I would imagine. From the outside, folks look in and think it must be great to be a Rockefeller.
Well, and it is. And of course, it's great to be a Rockefeller. But the painful parts are that you feel different, and that you see other people making assumptions about you that you may or may not fulfill. And you never know how much they know. But they always know more than you know. And so it's the I don't know, you know dynamic that can keep you kind of on your toes. And I was lucky that I developed a really good antennae.
Is that true with anyone who has a public life?
I think so. I think so. And it's just that in my family, the Rockefellers in general like to keep a much lower profile. And I'm probably bursting the bubble here, but I decided to do it because I think there are values worth sharing, and among them are the value of family, how important it is to really work through family, because you can leave your family, but your family comes right along with you wherever you are, in your marriage, your friendships, your relationships with your children. You just put your sister on the face of your child, or your brother on the face of your husband, and voila, you have your childhood problem all over again.
Well, we keep reliving our childhood over and over with these different players. I mean, whatever your childhood is, it forms the patchwork of what will become the rest of your life.
Yes, it really does.
And when we see people who haven't succeeded at life, I mean, they're the families at the center of that, as well as people who have succeeded. You make the point that it all comes down to the family. How people do in the world.
It does, and it's what does the family expect of you? I think today that many parents feel like, oh, they shouldn't be telling their kid what to do, because that's taking too strong an action, and they just want to support them. But I believe that supporting your child is really about seeing them, about listening to them, taking time around the dining room table or the kitchen table at night. Just if you ever are able to be home with them as much as possible, simply listen and guide from behind, not from ahead.
Well, it's so much more difficult now. I mean, now is a time, an economic climate where two parents have to work to afford a mortgage, and even at different levels of socioeconomic strata, I think that parents are less likely to be around as much now as they were.
I think that is true, and I certainly can't speak for the difficulties that people must go through, and I can't pretend that they don't have to really both work. Of course they do. But one thing that I would ask is, whether it's necessary to have a TV in every room, which I have been to places where people have a very low income, but they still have a TV in every room. And the parents don't encourage them to go outside. Now, maybe it's not safe. Maybe they can't go outside just alone if they're in the city. But, you know, a wooden spoon and a cardboard box can be great toys, and you don't need a TV or a video game to keep your child occupied if you just give them some space to use their imaginations.
Kids like the box more than the toy, in my experience.
Yeah. Don't you still remember climbing inside of a box and making this wonderful house for yourself? And then, you know what else was great? I had little stuffed Steve mice. And they were these little things from F.A.O. Schwartz, and they were my favorite toys when I was growing up. And I used to take those little, small cereal boxes of Rice Krispies and other things. They would come in individual. They still do, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they would be perforated down the front and then across the near the top. And I would carefully cut down there, take out the wax and the cereal, the wax paper, and I would build an armoire for my mouse house or dollhouse. And I covered them up, and I had used little bits of wire, and I made the rod for the little hangers, and I made their clothes, and I spent lots of time doing those things.
Those did look like armoires.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll never look at one again without thinking that.
We used to get those on airplanes, I remember.
Exactly. Oh, it's so fun. I made many armoires. I had one in every bedroom of that little house.
Your father was David Rockefeller.
He still is. Bless his heart. He's 98.
That's amazing.
And got back from, you won't believe this, but he just took a trip to London and Paris with his granddaughter.
And he's ambulatory, and he's cognizant, and all those other big words.
Yes.
As well. Yeah, great. Congratulations. Is longevity in the Rockefeller genes, do you think?
Yes, he's now beat the record, though. He exceeded the longest living Rockefeller, his grandfather, John D. Rockefeller Sr. Last spring, he exceeded that record. My great-grandfather lived to be 97 and a half. So,
we mentioned earlier he was America's first billionaire, which,
yes.
I mean, that would have been 1920s at that point. That was Standard Oil made
him
a billionaire.
Standard Oil about then, yes.
How old were you when you realized our family's different than other families? Was there a point at which you...
Probably when I went to kindergarten, but yeah, I would say about 5 or 6.
Would that have been public school or?
No, I did go to I went to private schools. I went to 2 different schools in New York. I went to first Chapin and then Brearley. And I think they both thought that my IQ was too low for them because I had what Daniel Goleman in Emotional Intelligence calls an amygdala response. That sounds really smart, so I love to say that. But whenever you get afraid, there's a very primitive response that goes off in your brain. It's an alarm, and it just shuts down everything. And I was afraid a lot growing up, so I could never test well.
Why were you
afraid? Why was I afraid? Well, I'm the youngest of 6 in a very large, busy family. About 50 people coming in and out a day. I had to remember everyone's names. There were 4 houses, many people to recognize, and... just a lot of pressures about how we were supposed to act and present ourselves. And when I didn't know something, either I'd be told, well, you stupid, don't you know that? You know, and really, you whatever it would be, you know, it was just how it was. And I happened to be a really sensitive person, so I took it in, unfortunately.
You took it on yourself and blamed
yourself? Yeah, I just believed it, and then I couldn't concentrate in school, and... So naturally, I didn't do well. Once I got a 10 on a history test where 60 was passing. Now, for any teacher to do that to a child is so cruel. It's one of the reasons that I got interested in social and emotional learning in the first place and emotional intelligence, because I don't think any teacher should ever do that. No child should ever have to suffer that kind of humiliation.
It's interesting to hear you and to read about the things that you went through, because people looking from the outside would think that's got to be a perfect life. And yet it's natural for any kid to want to be in a different family at some time in their childhood, right?
Oh, believe me, I so much wanted to belong to the family of my friend whose father was a doctor, but of course he was never home either. But at least they sat around all together before Christmas and stuffed oranges with cloves. And I thought that was really fun because they made these wonderful ornaments and they did it as a little family project. Now, I'm not saying that I didn't have family projects. My mother was really, really great at encouraging us to play outside. We built a prefabricated cabin on an island, and the youngest three of us were very involved in doing that and making paths on the island. And then we luckily had a lot of animals, and my father collects beetles still to this day. He has 150,000 specimens.
Wow.
And that was a point of connection with him where we could walk around and
say... You didn't find the beetles creepy as a kid, or did you...
No, because it was more important to connect to my dad. So I got over that in a hurry, and I loved coming up and saying, Daddy, Daddy, look, I just got a curculionid. I mean, how many six-year-olds knew that? So I
don't know that.
They're the weevils. They're the ones who bore through wood.
Wow.
There's long snouts.
I didn't know how many different varieties of beetles there were until a few years ago.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. They are the most prolific and diverse species on Earth.
And also one of the greatest bands.
And also one of the greatest bands.
About
you
that
got
as
it.
Well.
But it's spelled differently.
The point in the book...
Is it spelled differently?
It is, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yes, it is. That's right. See, that's my dyslexia. I can't remember spelling.
I wanted to talk about that for a minute, because when did you find out about the dyslexia? When was that labeled?
Well, unfortunately, actually, it was never fully diagnosed. I think they gave up on me before they knew about those tests. And so my mother very wisely decided to send me to a school in the Adirondacks called North Country School. It's near Lake Placid, and it's in the high peaks of the Adirondacks, and it's on a farm, an organic farm, and there were maybe 64 kids there at the time. I think there are about 75 now. And the kids help take care of the animals. They help sweep the rooms and help in the kitchen. It's such a total community, so that you're taught it. It's not such a narrow band of succeeding. And if you don't happen to do well in history or geometry, you could really do well in caring for a horse or winning a competition or something in riding. And that's how I began, and is how I learned that it doesn't matter where you begin, just begin.
You write a lot about relationships and interacting, and yeah. I can't remember the woman's name, but she was very, very rich, and she died in a hospital room where she lived the last 20 years of her life, even though she had all these properties.
Oh, yes, Huguette Clark.
Right, exactly, yeah, the heiress who...
Yes, as a matter of fact, her great-granddaughter, who was featured in that horrible story, is a very good friend of mine, and unfortunately... the other side is being represented by somebody very smart. And frankly, I knew about this story a long time before it ever came out, before she thought it was going to come out. Mm. And I personally know that my friend had, Carla Hall, had kept up with her all these years. And it was never for frivolous reasons. It was because she really did care about trying to keep a connection.
Well, it's interesting with that story is that Huguette wrote many letters to people. So there, even though she was alone and sort of isolated, but there was always this desire to interact. We need each other on a level.
We certainly do. And I think that's one of the most... challenging parts of being rich or famous is that you become more and more isolated, or can. You know, it's sort of like if somebody handed you a key to a castle, what do you do with it? Do you go in the castle and you climb up to the top turret and you watch the world from there? Or do you come down and decide something else to do with it? And if I was given a key, which I was, because there was such a beautiful legacy of it's actually a heavy mantle too, but in the credo at Rockefeller Center, one of the things that's carved in my brain is what grandfather said, John D. Rockefeller Jr., every opportunity, an obligation, every right, a responsibility, every possession, a duty. That's how he lived his life. And that was an isolating experience because he... he was largely alone, though he had advisors.
Is that what's by the rink? Because
yes,
last year I went
yes.
down there and I hadn't seen that quote before. I mean, I'd been there
you
so
still
many
hear
times.
The
and I was fascinated by it. I took a picture of it and I put it up on Facebook because I thought, you know, these. As many times as I've been to that rink,
yes.
I hadn't seen that quote.
Well, you know, if you asked probably almost any of the 250-plus members of my family who are 18 and older if they know that quote, probably most of them do. And it's not like their parents took them there and said, read this. It's just, I don't know how it comes through osmosis or something. But to your point of the importance of community, I think that what I wanted to finish the story about the key in the castle. What my family has inspired me to do is to come down out of the castle, find a community of people, and build bridges across the moat. And that's why I'm writing this book.
Well, it's a great thing that you've done here. And thanks
thank
for
you.
Persevering and getting it published. It's called Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself. Before we let you go, I need to know, do you do any truck sounds at all? Since we are on the trucking
Let's see. Well, there is the Doppler effect, but that might be more of a train, but I could leave you with that.
I'm a big fan of the Doppler effect.
All right. And there we go.
Thank you so much. Eileen Rockefeller, Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, a memoir is available now. We really appreciate you visiting. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure and a lot of fun.
And we will enjoy those sound effects for many years to come, I'm sure.
We'll send them to you. You can put them up on EileenRockefeller.com.
That
thanks so much
fabulous.
For that.
Thank you. Appreciate I want to expand my career.
Absolutely.
Okay.